You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Hey, everybody. Sorry about that. This is Compare and Contrast Debate Radio. Unfortunately, there was a huge scheduling issue because the other shows were running. Chase 1, I'm with the Storm Chaser team, has basically hijacked the entire night, and there's a scheduling conflict. No biggie. But anyways, we are now live here on Podcast Detroit Brews Radio. All right, so let me tell you what Compare and Contrast is. This is a heads-up debate radio show. We're just going to go through different topics and just kind of help each other learn with everybody else a different kind of side to a story. Now, today we are going to be talking about, is there a God? So what we will be doing is starting off kind of with our own stories, because this is kind of funny, is that Travis, say hello.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
There we go.
This is Travis Sturgill.
Travis Sturgill here actually used to be sort of atheist, used to be
agnostic,
sort of agnostic, kind of somewhere in there. But now you're Christian.
Christian, Apostolic Pentecostal.
Which is funny because I was born to a pastor and I'm now pretty atheist.
Right.
So anyways, let's go and get started. Travis, I want to hear your side of the story. I want to hear what kind of changed you over.
All right. So, I mean, growing up, I grew up in church, but I never truly believed until it was something in my life that had changed and something really miraculous happened in my life. And through my life experiences, I learned, and through logic, I realized that there has to be a creator, there has to be a God, and that our purpose is to serve that God. But I want to hear your side of the story.
Okay. So here for me is my biggest issue, right? Obviously, born a pastor, been in church my entire life. I have actually read the Bible, not at one time, the whole way through. I've read every book. I've read every verse.
Right.
All right. For me, this was the biggest issue. It's actually what I'm going to start this with, is faith. When I would ask any Christian, anybody who was Christian leadership about faith, they immediately said, you know, I'm a statistics person. I'm a, like I say, I chase forms. This is what I do. I live and die by the numbers, is that I have to have proof. And for a lot of the answers, it's, well, you know, you have to have faith. You have to have faith. You know, I can't look at faith and be okay with it. I mean, I know there's a lot of other, like, weird, like, contradictions of the Bibles. But, I mean, to sit there and just forced to believe that, I have issues with that. But even then, like, I've had a lot of bad experiences in church. Actually, this is a true story. At Fellowship Church in Saline, off Moon Road, actually, we passed on the way to work.
Yeah.
A Sunday school teacher cussed me out because she thought we were posting fighting videos of my friends fighting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I got cussed out in the middle of Sunday school. So that actually happened. So that was nuts. I haven't always had good experiences. But anyways,
there are good and bad experiences with just the human experience in general. But, I mean, I would argue a counterpoint to that is that, you know, evolution and the belief in science in itself takes faith to believe in as
well, to an extent, but you can also mathematically prove a lot of this. Like, let's say...
I mean, statistics can go either way, and I would say...
Statistics, yeah, if you want
there are two sides to every statistic.
Yeah, if you want to p-hat the numbers, but if you want to take the numbers out legitimately as the way they are, that's not going to be true. So you just said that there's a way to look at the statistics and kind of disprove evolution. Did I incorrectly hear that?
Yes.
All right. Can you please tell me where I can find that real fast? For those of you who don't know, we both have tablets and laptops, so we're going to be fact-checking each other as we go. So if you hear a momentary pause, it's not us being dumb. It's just that we're trying to fact-check each other. So, this is the best podcast ever. Just listen to our momentary bits of silence. All right, so let's go back on. Like, I wanted to start with faith. All right, I want you to sit here and I want you to tell me how faith is 110% something I should believe. I want you to try to convert me right now.
All right, so I would say first, that logically, how would you say that the earth is created? How has it came to be?
All right. Is that hypothetical or do you actually?
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is what I believe. All right, I believe that there was stars, dust, though not really stars and dust, but there was cosmic, basically periodic table of the elements. Those elements were out, did whatever, something sparked a bang. What happened? Don't know. I'm not smart enough to give you that answer, all right? Somebody out there is, that unfortunately is not going to be me. All right, something happened, it sparked, all right? You have got all these different pieces of matter, all these different parts of the elements that come together. Eventually, you get all one stuff stick together, you get a rock, you get all these planets, blah, blah, blah. We all know about mass, how gravity works. We all know that, all right? Eventually, the planet's going to cool down enough. We get water. That's our game changer. That's what makes us different. We have water. All right, organisms begin to, on a microscopic level, begin to form. They evolve. They get to where we are now. That's the very short Very short of it. So anyways.
I mean, what you're describing is a perfect mathematical scenario.
Yes.
Yes. And what would the odds of that scenario be? Is more or less the odds of that scenario?
1 in 500 something trillion.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's astronomically small. I'm not.
So I mean, I would just say a simple way to break that down. A simple way to say that is if you took an alarm clock apart, you put this alarm clock in a box. How many times? How long do you think you would have to shake this box before you have a fully assembled alarm clock? And now you're not talking about something where something can go right and wrong. It has to be 100% right. Biological mass has to be 100% right in order to sustain life, in order to sustain the well-being and the existence of the human race.
Well, if you wanted to say that, then it would be the same statistical. You know, how long would it take to do that? Well, I mean, shaking an alarm clock, is that how you build an alarm clock? Explosions are how you create life.
Right.
I mean,
even... Well, no, I mean, I wouldn't say that. I mean...
Well, you're not like a nuclear explosion, but you get what I'm saying. But, like, to say it's like, you're going to shake up this box, well, that's different.
I understand. I mean, and it's kind of like the metaphor of how many monkeys typing on a keyboard does it take to make the full works of Shakespeare? But along the way, you would have a lot of failures to have the full works of Shakespeare. We don't have evidence. We don't have evidence of failures of biological life. We don't have evidence of failures.
Well, that would be almost impossibly hard to observe. That's the problem. You have to remember, as a species.
But I mean, I would say it'd be simple. I mean, we have the observation of our own world and of our own perfectly designed biosphere. Our own perfectly.
Do you know how hard it is to predict that stuff? All right, here's the thing, okay? You want to go back. Let's look at geology, all right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people are sitting here saying, we'll talk about, you know, carbon dating. Well, even carbon dating is not 110%.
Right.
I mean...
And there's a lot of falsities.
There's a lot of different things. Because if you want to look into the past, and like you want to do what I do with meteorology, you want to look into the future, this is very, very difficult. So to sit here and say, oh, well, it's easy to just go back and look, I'm going to have to sit here and say that's absolutely not true.
I'm not saying it's easy to go back and look, but I'm just saying logically.
I'm saying it's not even...
So if you had to take the statistics, which is more likely? Is it more likely that there is a creator who designed a human race, in mind, or is it more likely that an alarm clock was shaken in a box and fully, you know, and a fully functioning alarm clock came out of this box?
Without a moment's hesitation, I'm going to say a shaken alarm clock. Because let's just say there is a God. All right, God can be kind of a dick sometimes. All right, let's look at some of this stuff. Okay,
I think that's an immature way to look at it.
I know it's an immature way, but the podcast.
I mean, he is, yeah.
You understand. It's the entertaining way to say that sometimes your decisions can be a little callous.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, but I know, like, I'm looking right now at Judges 21:10 through 24. This is the new
reference
NLT. It's talking about, like, rapes and pillage and stuff. Like, I mean, the Bible says to everybody, even the person who's been raped is to be stoned. Like, how is that okay? Like, I mean, let's just say that creation is true. Let's just say I'm completely wrong right now. If that's totally true, and then what makes that okay? Because, you know, see, now I know this is a little off topic.
Yeah.
But now, let's just say if there is a God, and let's say he's the Christian God, why would I now want to follow that? Because if I see somebody getting raped, I'm not going to stone them. I mean, I've seen plenty of very awful things, and at no point... I think I can have it if you wanted to read it.
All right. I would say if you're talking about Judges 21:10 through 24, in specific, I would say you'd have to take the entire chapter, the entire passage. You can't just cherry pick.
And
this passage is meant as an illustration of what God does for all of us, and what God does for all of us in each of our lives.
Well,
what's that?
Can you elaborate? Because I don't understand. I'm not trying to be rude or thing.
No, it's all right.
da, da, da. We need to have one of those little, like, sound cues, so as soon as one of us stop,
the Jeopardy, doo, 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 doo.
That'd be funny. So yeah, anyways, everybody, like I said, this is the first episode. A little bit rusty, which is fine. This is actually your first podcast.
So Judges 21.
Anyways, we're good to go.
All right, Judges 21. So you're referencing this passage. Look, I...
It's okay to say... It's okay to convert to the dark side, of course.
No, it's not.
Absolutely, it's not. He says no. Not live on air. Will that happen? Dum, 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 dum. This is fun.
I'm going to look at the actual passage.
Oh my God, I have the passage. Okay. Oh man. Okay. So, anyways, like I'm saying, like let's just like parts of this is okay. I think at one point, if you, I get at one point, I think it's, I forget what the word is. It says you have to sell the woman that's been raped for like whatever silver because now she's not worth as much as she was as a virgin. All right. How I want you to try to defend that a little bit because let's just say hypothetically speaking, there's a God.
I mean,
Why
this is
would
a society that we won't understand in our modern day, but this was a way that somebody could be redeemed. This is a small
So
example.
people are worth actual money?
No, obviously not. And obviously in our society, we understand this, but there was a bride price. You're talking about a bride price. And the cold hard reality of it was, is an unvirgin, unmarried woman was worth less in a bride price than one who was a virgin in biblical times. But we're talking about biblical times. We're not talking about modern day.
I'm talking about my morals, and my morals say that a woman will not be bought for anything. Like, any person will be
But
bought for anything.
it wasn't buying for
Maybe.
anything. It was a bride price. It was a token that was paid.
So it's like a marriage license.
Yes, more or less.
That still seems very messed up to me.
I mean, it's primitive to us in our day, but this is biblical
It is
times.
primitive.
This isn't
So do
a
you think that people primitive, because you said you bring up the word primitive, like it's primitive, it's maybe it's not as well understood, maybe things are a little bit different.
I think
Do
the
you think
society was at a different rate. I think that the humans were still functioning at the same rate or a higher level.
Well, society is a direct reflection of how people are at that particular point in time. Do you really think that if that bride prices were maybe a little bit let's say incorrect. They say maybe it's not as right, maybe it's not as the best way to do things. Do you really think maybe that the Bible that was written by people, spoken to God, didn't have issues, didn't use any way there could be fallacies in that?
Fallacies in the system in itself. I mean,
Fallacy in the
the
system
heart of man,
itself,
the
fallacies.
heart of man of wi is wicked in and of itself.
Well,
and
yeah,
this is a
okay.
book
Well, I
written
got
to man
yeah.
by
You go.
God, by God's hand. So no, go ahead.
Okay, so here's the thing, okay. Men are wicked. That's what you just said, correct?
Right.
All right, here's the thing. God's talking to you. That's all fine and dandy. What's to stop you from putting something in there you own? What's some of this, I mean, the media does it. I work with the media. I work with all the media stations. What's
So you're saying in the creation of the
in the
Bible in
Bible,
itself?
what's to keep you from spending something your way?
I
What's to
mean,
keep something? What if what it what let's this is a very strange hypothetical, but I want you to answer it very seriously. Let's just say that God doesn't say you're not supposed to stone a woman who's been raped, but let's say you're not supposed to have a difference of price for a bride price. But Paul, let's just a hypothetical Paul, Matthew, Andrew, one of these guys who's writing, thinks that's true. Now he spins it that way. What's to stop that from now? Here we are, 2,000 years later. What stops that?
what stops that? God's divine word in and of itself. But that's not, I would go back to say, can you find evidence of that? But there's
There's no way to find evidence. I'm talking about hypothetical. That's why I say hypothetical. I don't want to sit here and say, well, find evidence of this because that would be almost impossible to find.
I can't find any evidence of that. And I would say that the Bible in and of itself is an unfalsifiable book.
What do you mean, unfalsifiable?
That all of the information can and has been verified.
Really?
Yes.
Do you want to take a guess what I'm about to bring up? I'll
What are you
see.
about to bring up?
I'm about to bring up the Great Flood.
The Great Flood.
Because I
Oh.
know what you're about to say, because you're going to say it came from the rocks and it came from under the ground, aren't you?
No, it actually says it came from above. The
Oh, so you
firmament.
actually believe it actually rained the
Yeah,
land, don't you?
but.
Okay, cool. Please, let's go into atmosphere, the atmospheric guy. Please continue. All right. From the biblical standpoint, using facts, science, and statistics, I want you to explain to me how that happened.
I'm just going
I've
to read you
got
the
all the
verse.
minutes. I'm ready to go. You are now in my wheelhouse.
So,
Atmospheric science. Here at Cheese One. This is how come I don't sing because I'm terrible at it.
yeah, please don't.
that was all. That was the most terrible thing I've heard. There's like I think 40 people, 50 people from our group alone that are from where we work at the same place that are listening live, and they all just tuned off right there. They're all like, "Yep, done. Not doing that anymore." Like that was too much. So too far. I want to say hello to Mike Reiser from the Chasers Lounge. That show is up next. I know he's over here listening. Huge shout out to all you guys. And Ryan from Achievement Unlocked. That's an awesome new show. Covers everything from having nerdy, gamey. They take a kind of a real world look at some of these new and old school games. Chasers Lounge, obviously. So our Storm Chase podcast that comes on next. We will be covering the new Barry Myers pick from Donald Trump and how that changes everything, in the Weather Service, a whole bunch of different topics, a lot of cool stuff. Anyways, Travis, I believe you are ready to fire.
All right, now the flood was on the earth for 40 days. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the heaven. There is another passage, which I am looking for.
Well, okay, how does that explain the water? I'm talking about the water. How did the water get there? I don't know what the surface area of the world is. Actually, I probably should have looked that up. But it's quite a bit. So that's what we will be doing now. Travis, I'm not trying to be rude, but we do have a finite amount of time.
Oh, I know.
All right.
So, at any rate, the Bible says that the water came from above and below. And before this time, it did not rain. There was no precipitation. There was no precipitation in this time before the Great Flood.
Okay.
That is not the environment that existed before the Great Flood. There was no precipitation. It was a new concept.
Interesting. Okay.
And there it says that there was a mist that rose from the earth.
Okay. Let's one step at a time. It's a lot to unpack. Did they fish at that time?
There was bodies of water, yes.
Okay, well then there was rain. There was fog.
There was.
That's how that works.
There was no. I mean, that's how the water works today, but there was no ecosystem that supported that. There was no.
What does it matter about the ecosystem? That's how the water table works.
But I have multiple proofs for the flood in and of itself.
I am all ears.
So the mountains rose out of the earth in itself.
From
of itself.
The plates, the tectonic plates.
It was the mountains rose out of the earth in and of itself. As a formation from the floodwaters of themselves, you can find fossils. You can find snails all the time in Indiana at the tip of mountain ranges all over the earth, and you can find evidence that
see what fossils were found on Mount Everest real quick. Please continue.
Yeah, you go for it. You can find evidence that the Great Flood did create the Grand Canyon. That it did create canyons.
How did it create the Grand Canyon? Please, I've been there.
How did it create the Grand Canyon? Yeah, we see evidence of small Grand Canyons all over the earth caused by, you know, 2 and 3 day flash flooding.
Do you want to know why that's different?
Why? How would that possibly be different? You have a grand scale where the entire earth was flooded and where those waters drained and eroded the rock formations. Where did it drain to? The oceans themselves. There was no separation of the continents before.
Oh, none at all?
There was none at all.
Oh, my goodness. I did not fully understand what you meant. That's a lot to unpack. So the water
that we're talking about was the oceans in and of themselves.
Okay, so this covered the entire world, and somehow the water that appeared, which we haven't even gotten to how it got there, appeared, then somehow.
I'm not gonna stretch.
I'm not trapping you. I'm asking you very honest questions.
Yeah, no. I appreciate it.
Let me be okay, this is off topic, but this is very much what led me to not be a Christian. I was in a Bible school. And our youth pastor at the time, I'm not going to mention his name, asked us why we believed in God. And everybody went around them and said everything. And I said, they asked me why I believe in God. And I said, it's because my parents told me to. And he's like, that's not an answer. I was like, well, I'm going to need. I was like, that's the answer I got. And he's like, no, why are you a Christian? And I didn't have an answer for him. So he's like, I want you to look up some passage or some part of the Bible. I want you to decide why you're a Christian. And I looked this up. And then if you believe that the Bible is a literal interpretation of God, this story right here ends it for me. And honestly, after this is when I kind of consider myself to be an atheist. Now, that being said, I'll get back to my original question. I just looked up any fossils found on Mount Everest, and there are, but there's one at the tip. There's one at the point. They're up there, but they're very, very small. Now, let's continue the conversation.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
With what? There was fossils on Mount Everest, but not near the top.
It's
like two-thirds of the way up, which is very tall. I'm not saying you're wrong at all.
We have sea life fossils found on mountains all throughout the earth. I'm not sure about the top, but on mountains all throughout the earth, on the tip of these mountains, you have sea life fossils and evidence and remains.
I mean, there's plant life, because there's a lot of sulfur, a lot of plant life like that.
That was at the bottom of the sea. These mountains were the bottom of the sea before the flood.
Okay, so then how much? Okay, let's. I guess there's so much to unpack. we should have made this about the floods. What we should have done. Okay, so where did this much water come? Do you know how much water this is? I mean, you're talking about hundreds of billions of cubic tons of water. We could be in the trillions at this point. Actually, I'm not sure. I don't even know where you start with that kind of math. It's like, was the Earth a perfect sphere then? Like, was it perfectly flat? Like, I don't understand. Was there no rock formations at all? Because even in the kids' Bible stuff, there's always rocks. I mean, there's always a land change. You can see they walked up a hill with a cross.
All right. So Genesis 7:11 describes the fountains of the great deep, the windows of heaven opening. So this is the description of the flood in and of itself. And the great deep is used three other times throughout the Bible, and it refers to the ocean in and of itself. So the formations of the ocean in and of themselves were the flood.
Hold on. All right, repeat that, please.
I was saying that the fountains of the great deep is a phrase used to describe the oceans in and of themselves, and different times throughout the Bible they're
so
used.
So the water came up from, like, what I guess we would call today a geyser?
They came from below and the windows of heaven. So the water rose from below and above.
All right, here's the thing. Water is very deep underground. All right, from the Siberian super deep hole they drilled, they found water very deep.
Right.
They did not find hundreds of billions of cubic tons of water.
But you can in the ocean. And this is my point entirely. And the Great Flood in itself created the separation of the continents.
So what? Oh, my goodness. Okay, sorry. It's just a lot to think about right now. So, you have hundreds of billions. Let's split it in half. Let's just say, because I have no idea what this math is. Let's say it's 300 cubic billion tons of water you're going to need. Okay. 150 billion are underground, and you've got the stuff from up top. Where does that now come from? I know I'm cutting off the groundwater situation. I understand that. But
I'm actually going to look up the volume that was needed, because I am actually curious.
Yeah, I'm actually curious, too, because I'm kind of shooting numbers around. Like, you know, I've never actually looked that up. Because, you know, why would you study before going on a podcast live to 240,000 people?
Right.
Like that. Come on. Like,
we definitely should have.
This is the Chasers Lounge. This is Chase One. We have no idea what we're doing. That is half the battle plan. Like, what are we doing? Like, I'm going to tell you when we get there. All right. So you let me know what the cubic, how much water we need here. Bum, bum, ba-dum, bum, bum.
All right. You be Googling as well.
Oh, I am way Googling. I tell you what we're going to do different from the next show. We're gonna have a much better script, because the unscripted version apparently takes a lot of Googling. We need to have a team. We have a fact checker with us.
Right.
That's what I'm about to do, is have a fact checker.
Yeah.
That would have been a lot better plan. All right. Amount of water needed to cover the earth. Let's do this. Come on, Google, don't prove me wrong, baby. About 70% of the Earth's surface. I know that. How much water was needed for the Great Flood? This is from some guy who's just.
Something I would, Earth has intriguing about the dimensions of Noah's Ark in and of itself.
All right. Well, okay. I have an answer. Jesus Christ! This is trillions. 259,923,204. That is trillion miles. I don't even know. This is such a massive number. That means there had to be 813 miles of rain for the biblical flood, 813 million miles. Oceans have about 321 miles of water. So right there, you're in trouble. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Man on the medium. If this math is correct.
What is that math based on, though? Because
it's a guy with a calculator, but he's doing better than we are right now. So.
Okay, I know what you're talking about. You're looking at secularcafe.com, correct?
Way wrong. I'm on medium.
Okay, all right. Anyways, I seen that same math. Okay.
Well, that's a good sign. That probably means the math is right if you keep seeing the same numbers.
Well, same exact math based on the height of Mount Everest itself. But I just said that Mount Everest in and of itself was a formation of the Great Flood.
Well, that's untrue. It doesn't say anything about that Let's not cut that by 25% because of the land occupy some generations of the story. I don't know why it says generations. Say there was no. Yeah. So this is right. Yeah. So you have, right now, you have 321 million miles of water inside this bad boy. So where's the other difference between the 831 million, 813 to 321 million go? Like I said, I'm not trying to be rude. I'm genuinely curious. I need to know what is about another 300 billion.
I think your math is flawed because it's based off of the height of Mount Everest itself. We needed to cover that when we just discussed.
But even if they came out of the ground and the rocks rose up, the water's gonna have to cover Mount Everest anyway.
But Mount Everest was a formation of the
Earth. Yes, that's great. If you have, hold on, one second. If you have that much water, it's going to have to come from somewhere. It comes underground, right? Let's say it comes up. All right, that land's going to have to be displaced to give way to the water. It's not going to go up, back down, then come back up. It's going to come up with the water, and the water's going to have to go on top of that. So even by any stretch of the imagination, that math would be correct. Actually, the math I just read you probably wouldn't be correct because it excluded the mountains, so I'd have to go find that again. But let's... I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be rude, but if you look at the Bible as a literal interpretation of God's word,
yes,
it falls apart right here.
It does not. Okay. And I dispute that vehemently. So let's look into the word mountain in of itself. Is any rock formation above 1,000 feet not a mountain? It doesn't have to be 29,035 feet like Mount Everest. And I believe that the mountains before pre-flood were much shorter and were not to reaching the scales of Mount Everest, of the 29,000 feet that we're talking about. I don't think that when it says that the water covered the mountains of the earth, that it is talking about a 29,000-foot mountain that was formed post-flood.
I'm not sure they even knew it existed at that point.
Right. Well,
let's look at this.
It did not exist at that point. So there's nothing to know that it existed. A mountain was...
I'm going to have to disagree on that because...
Was any rock formation...
Well, I mean... Okay, well, what creates a mountain? Other than the flood, according to you, what creates a mountain?
Rock formation.
A rock formation creates a mountain. Tectonic plates create mountains. It also creates fault lines. That's why we have mountains on fault lines.
Right. I understand this, but...
I was just covering bases here.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm going to hit it again. We left it at the top, but we'll come right back to it. Where does the extra 230-something billion gallons of water that's not in the oceans end up?
Like I said, your math is based off of
Mount
Everest itself.
Then let's adjust for that. Let's adjust for that.
I mean, the U.S. in and of itself uses 275 billion gallons of groundwater daily.
Yes.
This is a daily occurrence. This is a daily occurrence in our current ecosystem. This was an ecosystem where it did not rain, and then a mist rose from the ground. So this was water rising from the ground of an in and of itself and an opening of the window of heaven or coming down from the sky
itself. This is what I'm going to say because I study meteorology and I'm pretty good at it. I have a storm chase team. We have pretty much the top team in Michigan. We're the only ones to really be scouted out by a couple other large hashtag foreshadowing. We're good at what we do, all right? Here's what I'm going to say, all right? There was rain back in the day because even by the small bodies of water, there's still plenty enough to have a different effect on the mesoscale. Mesoscale is in which a small area of weather, which we study. It's what I study, all right? A small body of water, I can tell you this because I have an airplane and I like to fly. As soon as you hit the shoreline, you feel a difference when you hit the water. Evapotranspiration, it's evaporation. That, it's immediate, you know, all right? So if you're going to sit here and say there was body, you agree, there was bodies of water, and you're going to sit and tell me there was no rain, I'm going to seriously have to disagree with that. Because I can take you out storm chasing with me. I can put you front to front with a wall club.
Which I have been excited to do for a while.
We'll cross the bridge when we get there.
Yeah.
but I have sat across from storms, because we live in Michigan, for those of you who don't know, we're in Michigan. We are covered by two massive lakes, Michigan and Huron. And they screw up all of our weather because of the bodies of water. And they're, in the grand scheme of things, not big. I know as far as lakes, they're massive. That's why they're called the Great Lakes. But even smaller lakes, like some lakes in Indiana, some of the smaller lakes in Oklahoma where I'm from, all of these play a big difference in weather. And if you want to sit here and say the weather said there was no rain, I'm going to say that's wrong. Because they also grew crops back then. Am I correct?
Yes.
So all the water came from the ground?
You are, but we're talking about a more carbon-rich environment in and of itself before the flood. But yes, although all the water did come from the ground, it came from a mist from below.
Then how come we have tens of millions of dollars worth of farming equipment that brings the water above ground if you can just do it underground? Because you can sit here and you can tell me that, that's not like that in every ecosystem. Then I'm going to tell you that that's wrong, and it's like that in every single ecosystem. Because even back in the Middle East, back where all this happened, they still bring water in.
I mean, I understand the irrigation and all of this, but...
Concede.
All right.
Hold on, I have a real question. What are we going to? How long are we... I guess let's go to 5:30. I have no idea. Well, I guess for those of you who don't know, our clock got messed up because of a communications error because, like I say, we were Chase One. We basically took over all Tuesday. So everything got screwed up. But anyways, I think we're just going to push it a little further into our adult stuff.
5-3.
So
back to your original point.
Back to the original point is if there is groundwater, all right, why do we not need to deal with that now? Because the water gets sucked up by the ground. That's how water cycle works. So, I mean, that water, while not as intense, should still be there. Corn, for example, is a pretty short root vegetation. I mean, if by that theory, you wouldn't need the giant wheel to run
wheels for irrigation. Would the mist not be an irrigation system in and of itself? Do plants not need water to survive?
They absolutely need water. That's what I'm saying. But if you have only two bodies of water, how in the world are they
provide it? Misting misting from the ground. This is all the plants need to survive, and it was a perfectly sustaining ecosystem.
And you have and somehow the plants evolve, so now you're going to admit to because now I'm that's not true. You just admitted that you would need some kind of evolution because plants like that now don't do that.
Well, first of all, let's go into that in a second, but yeah, because I'm not debating the fact that nature in and of itself can adapt to its environment, but I'm not going to say that
What is your difference between evolution and adaption? Because I would agree with you there's a difference, but I would say that is evolution. Because how much you eat and how you eat is survival of the fittest.
Right. So you're going into an argument that's called a macro versus microevolution.
Yes, I was about to say that.
Yes. So I believe in microevolution, and that is the ability that God has given nature to adapt to
its survival. Yeah, that's adaptation. But you don't know, micro is also adaption. So
yeah, exactly.
You'll hear me refer to it as adaption.
The root of the word. But I do not believe that a dog can become a horse through macroevolution. I don't think that you have evidence
that's
of
because
this.
They're different because one's a different species. That's how
one's a different species, right? So I do not believe that you can transcend one species to the next.
We are all over the place today. Okay, so let me hit you on a different point. Do you believe people came from monkeys?
No.
Okay, let me. Do you want to know why that's also very wrong? Because we didn't come from monkeys, we came from primates because we're primates.
Our primal species.
Yes.
This primordial species was, as we would know today, a monkey. So I believe that is a false argument, and that is a full circle argument that you are not.
I would say that it's wrong because I think that's a misunderstanding because people are not primates. As we're not. We are Homo sapiens.
Yeah.
I misspoke earlier. I understand. But we're Homo sapiens. We are human beings
in and of itself. Right. So then let me ask you, do you believe that we came from a primordial species, which then monkeys came from and humans?
I would say we're all in some weird biological way related, and don't ask me how to prove that because, like, again...
Related by the breath of God and related by...
Oh, my God!
So you can call that carbon, okay? You can call that carbon.
Yeah, carbon is the building block of life.
Carbon is the building block of life. So you can call that carbon, that we are related by the same exact matter to nature in and of itself.
Well, yeah, but that's true with anything. Our blood cells, our DNA, can almost mimic dirt as well as stars. So, I mean, what is your point there?
And Genesis says that God breathed the breath of God life into the dirt in and of itself. And that life was formed. And this is my point entirely.
All right, I'm ready.
This is my point entirely. That there is a more logical solution that we were designed through this natural system than we were just a clump of cells which randomly happened to evolve to this today. But there is great evidence of microevolution and adaptation in our world through nature in and of itself. And I think that is a God-given.
All right, I'm going to touch on that in a second. But we kind of got off topic from my original question here, which was, do you really believe that plants then function differently now?
No, and I didn't say that at all.
Oh, I know. No, you didn't say that. I said that because this is... Right. Let me just finish my thought real fast. All right, here's the issue I have. You have plants that you said the mist came from the ground. Okay, if I'm hearing you right, that was what they needed to survive by, right? Because I'm telling you right now...
They needed water to survive.
Yes,
correct.
But on the scale you're talking about, you're talking about it's not microscopic, but you're talking about a microscopic comparison and now amount of water to help them survive.
Right, in a more carbon-rich environment, and then we had a different environment pre-flood. This is just the environment in and of itself.
So, I mean, the way something eats is what is determined to be survival of the fittest, eat or be eaten. All right, so I would say that is not a piece of micro. I would not say it's adaptation. I would say that is full-blown evolution. I would say,
that's not the argument I'm creating.
That's the argument I'm creating. That's what I'm trying to say, because you changed about the plants. I went, wait, hold on a second. So, if you're changing the way something
I'm saying that they are the very same plants, the very same formation of those plants.
But how would they eat with 70% less water? I understand carbon. I understand carbon.
From nowhere. I'm saying that that water is still on this earth to this day. And that your figure of the 323 trillion gallons of water, I think...
It's 831 trillion.
831 trillion. I'm sorry.
Well, I think it's billion, but it doesn't matter because these numbers are so big, nobody can focus on them.
Well, if it was a billion, I can prove that to this day just in the U.S. water usage alone. But... So it does matter. It does matter. So I'm saying that that very same water is on this earth to this day, that your figure is off, and I do need to research the actual figure, which is why, you know, planning ahead for these shows.
Yeah, didn't I
picked
this.
We should have been planning all week for these.
I did plan. I feel like I did pretty good. I did not plan as much because obviously I had a freaking airplane I had to build. That was a train ride. But I think a schedule, I mean, an actual itinerary would be good. But I do like when it flows, right? The issue is just checking the numbers. Because truthfully, what we could do is what a lot of other podcasts do when I was listening, doing research for this show, is a lot of them don't actually fact check. So when you hear us stop and we're like, oh, my God, why are these guys are idiots. It's their first show and they're not talking. It's like, yeah, because we're making sure we're right.
Right.
So if you're about to sit here and say, oh, my God, you guys stop, blah, 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 I'm not going to apologize for that because I know that the information I just said on air to the, what is it, 200-something thousand people, whatever it is.
Yeah, is correct.
Is correct. Yeah. And I'm not going to apologize for that. I will never apologize for that. Anyways, continue on. Sorry, I cut you off there.
You're right. I don't even remember where we were at, though. I think we were on
give you a new topic. Micro versus yeah. All right. So, like I say, the water that's always been here has always been here, but it was underground or whatever. So, here's my next question. How far would that water need to be underground? Would it need to be 30,000 foot to then push up Mount Everest in that particular spot? In the Like, I mean, I don't understand.
I'm not sure.
Because at that point, because now you're getting very close. You're past the crust. You're into the mantle. So at this point, you're talking about boiling water. Now that your mist thing makes a lot more sense, but now if that mist...
I believe that there was water contained in the firmament, too, which is described in the Bible. The firmament, that the water is from above. I'm not talking about just water from the ground.
We haven't even gotten to the ark, by the way, everybody.
Yeah.
we're not even there
there's
yet.
There's actually very cool new evidence on the ark in its of itself.
Oh, my God. Okay, we're not there yet. Let's one bite at a time, buddy. It's how you eat an elephant. One bite at a time. All right. As you were saying... Oh, do we have a bell? Oh, this is going to get ugly. Oh, you know what we should do? We should keep track. Every time one of us stops, we hit the button for the other one. We'll keep a scorecard.
So we have to keep this rolling.
We have to keep this rolling.
Less fact-checking on air.
I don't know about less fact-checking, just figuring out how to talk while you're looking.
Right.
I mastered that through. I'm glad that Mike runs the Chasers Lounge.
I have a one-track mind, and I do not have the ability to multitask.
I am ADHD, baby. Yeah. What's up? Welcome to my world. This is what I do.
One task at a time. I do that decently, but I cannot focus on more than one task at
a time. Yeah, it's fine. So anyways, let's get back on topic here for just a moment, because we are getting close to the end of the time, unfortunately.
All right.
Back to what you were saying about, you know, the amount of water, where it all was stored. This is the question I just posed. If you have 30, like, let's say the water displaced everything, you were mountains, okay?
Okay.
The water has to be somewhere. So did it push the mountains up 30,000 feet? So, like, I'm going to reiterate the same point I made. Hold on. I'm reiterating the same point I just made. If the water is 30,000 feet underground, let's be a lot more conservative. Let's be 20,000 feet. It's beginning to get to the point where it'll begin to boil and come back up. So... what area do you have this on? I mean, that's massive. I mean, I know the Mount Everest range is enormous as in of itself, but I don't think people understand. Like, the size of a washing machine, that amount of water weighs 1 ton. There was 831 million of those things. Like, that's so much to think. I mean, you cannot fathom that.
Right, and you cannot fathom the creation in and of itself. But
we are.
But we are.
Live on air. Live with the podcast of Joint Royal Oak Studios.
So like I said, this was a formation of water from below and from above. So this is how this mountain was formed, through the Great Flood.
And I don't understand where the... So how did that water not boil off when it was in the ground? Which you say there was a mist, great, but there was a mist once.
I missed once. No. This is the ecosystem pre-flood. I think you're missing that point. That the
I might be. I think it's not a missing the point.
The ecosystem pre-flood was that there was a mist that came up from the ground as we know today, rain. This was the ecosystem of the time.
And this was just a regular everyday occurrence.
Yes.
And this isn't something that was like after the flood. This
documented.
That would be a huge. If the rain was suddenly came from up and all of a sudden it comes down, I'm going to document that once in a book. Like, oh yeah, by the way, this happened.
Yeah, I mean,
is that documented anywhere? Because I can tell you right now, I know that it's not. So unless you're going to be able to prove to me that that happened, I'm going to have to say not BS. But I'm going to have to say that's incorrect.
I mean,
got him. 1 point. 1 point to the atheist.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, that's what we do, baby. Every day I'm hustling, hustling. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, dude, we still got time. Oh yes, son. Oh yes, we got 20 more minutes, son.
All right, all right.
Thank you for the people who listen to this podcast. They're still here. I would not call it a train wreck. I would say it's off topic, but I'd say an actual debate is like this. So
yeah. I really would like to get into micro versus macro evolution, but I mean, this
we can flood, always come back to a topic.
This flood is very interesting. And
yeah, I'm kind of glad we got here.
I'd like to debate this further with evidence of the water in front of us and more of a research topic.
We can do that as more as a research topic, right now, unfortunately, we're not in that position. I am asking you a very genuine question. I would like, to the best of your ability, within 20 minutes in your laptop connected to the internet, I would like to know where that water came from, because this is a big issue.
Water came from? Well, I think that it was
created. It came from underground. If you want to say it's created by God and he just poofed it into existence, and you can say that for anything. Let me finish my thought.
Okay.
All right, if you just poof that into existence, and then it's kind of like when little kids play on the playground with their imagination, it's like, oh, I just did this, so you don't get anywhere. At this point, I find it to be imaginary. Now, I understand what your point is, okay? I understand where you're going with this. Where I'm going with this is that when you constantly sit and say, oh, well, God, it's a miracle, you know, the power of the miracle suddenly gets diminished to the point where it just seems like you don't have an argument, and it's a very convenient zip, like that's somehow going to change my argument.
No, it was a snappy comeback, more or less. Okay. But the ecosystem was created by God in the first 7 days in Genesis. So that was a snappy comeback, more or less. That's not really what I was trying to point. What I am trying to say is that this water that did exist pre-flood, and it does exist on Earth to this day. It's the formation of the oceans and of the separations of the continents as we know it today. And this is where the water is today. And before pre-flood, we did not have an ecosystem that included rain, and that it was a mist, and that there was a more carbon-rich environment,
which did not produce. Help the people, though.
I mean, carbon is the building block of life.
Carbon dioxide?
No,
the gases form carbon.
No, carbon, the element in and of itself.
Okay, no, I was just making clear.
Yeah, no, that's good. No, carbon in and of itself, and that you had a more oxygen-rich environment in and of itself. Okay, so you know that we have an environment that's something like 71.
It's 71%. I think
71%.
50% oxygen, nitrogen.
Yeah.
There's a weird amount of helium.
Yeah.
Hydrogen.
Yeah.
So it makes a can. Yeah.
Yeah. So a more oxygen-rich environment will produce more growth.
It'll also create more massive fires.
Well.
I have a point.
Good point.
Please.
Okay.
I'll continue with the rest of your thought.
I mean, that's it, more or less.
So here's the thing. Are you talking about, let's say they're out in the wilderness, right? There's wilderness, correct? It's stated in the Bible.
Yes.
All right. Here's my question. How do you keep that from going off like a bomb? Because I can tell you, because I work with rockets. Shout out to Anthony DeBacher. What's up, baby? Some of the fuels we use is powdered oxygen is an accelerant. Some of them use hydrogen. You mix these two together, it is the most insane thing you've ever seen, but it's extremely efficient for a rocket engine. All right, and we're talking about ounces
just
of
like
stuff.
Just like fighter pilot jets can't use hairspray because it is flammable in the pure oxygen rich.
Yeah, insane. Okay, so here's my question. How do you keep that from sparking off and becoming all of a sudden an accidental apocalypse? How much oxygen are you talking about?
I'm talking about a more oxygen-rich environment. I'm not talking about a pure oxygen.
I understand. We're not talking about an explosive.
Yeah,
right?
Like
there's a difference between an
oxygen.
Explosive and a.
I mean, any amount to dilute that would, decrease the flammability of oxygen in and of itself. And I'm not saying that the environment was only oxygen.
No, I understand.
The same building blocks
were
the same. And the oxygen or the air in and of itself was a different makeup.
So you're saying that the atmosphere evolved?
I'm saying that the atmosphere. That the atmosphere was changed post flood.
It was changed.
Evolution.
So the people that were used to a more pure oxygen rich environment were able to adjust pretty well, you'd say?
No, that's why the aging today is so accelerated. That's why we age.
Well, it's interesting because only
age at the rate
only
we do today.
Noah was, I think Noah in the Bible, he was 600 years old. Okay, nobody else was 600.
No, that's not true. That's not true at all. And people live to over.
Oh, he's got a pamphlet. Watch out. He was ready for that. He was ready for that. Oh, as soon as I said that, he pulled. I had never seen a man move so quick in my life as I just saw Travis going to grab his Bible timeline pamphlet.
Yep.
Oh, Lordy. All right, so go ahead, hit me with this pamphlet real fast. Right,
so actually...
he's going to give it to me. Oh, God.
Yeah, so this is the Bible timeline.
All right, let me get these people here.
And of the men of Genesis.
God took him at 300. So the
this is the life. This is the lifespan.
Excellent.
All right, so the lifespans were further. And
interesting.
They were longer in this environment.
Excellent. All righty, so you would say time is a pretty marvel concept, correct?
What's that?
You would say time's a pretty marble concept. We take it for granted today. We always know the time.
Of course.
Cool. How do you take time back then?
How do you take time?
Hmm? How do you know the time back in Bible time? 2,000 years ago.
Through night and day. The same as it is today. The year was the same.
Well, that's my question.
The year was the same. The day was the same. You had the same night and day cycle. I'm not saying that there was a different cycle.
Well, there was a different time cycle, which is why I'm asking. Because
there was a different time cycle as in how it was counted.
Because if you're doing it night and day, that's all fine and dandy. And there is proof within the Bible.
PM right now
is
our creation in and of itself. And 5:24 p.m. means nothing to plants. It means nothing to nature in and of itself.
Well, you just said 5:20. Okay, this is another, again, very off topic. You said 5:24. We take it for granted, right?
Yeah.
You said that's a proof of our existence, or proof of what did you just say? Say what you
I said that 5:24 p.m. right it is right now is that a man-made concept. It is a man-made
concept. That's what I was making sure.
It's not a natural concept.
Yes, that's what I was. Okay,
you don't have a giant clock in the sky.
I thought you were saying it was a natural concept. No. I'm like, okay, that was
No. This is a man-made concept. Got it.
Let's say 300 something years old. Okay, let's just go back to hypothetical. Let's say this is all correct. Let's say Adam at the fall was 930 years old. That is intense. So carbon right now hurts the aging process. So how long do you think that humans are going to survive after the flood without a critical change in environment? A change, let's hold on a moment, that is so critical, you can only live 10% as long as the people before. And they lived through that transition. Because let me just stop you real fast before you say anything. If I take you into another higher altitude, all right, let's say I take you up to 14,000 feet, you become hypoxic. All right, your blood begins to throw out. You begin, and you will eventually just pass the F out and die.
Right.
All right, that's a massive atmospheric change. That's a massive world change. Yep. And you were going to tell me that the amount of carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, and hydrogen in our atmosphere that which we breathe changed so much that it took a lifespan from 1,000 years to 100 years overnight. Right. And you're telling me they're going to live through that? How long do they live afterwards?
How long do they live afterwards?
Yeah, how long do they live? Because I do know Noah happened to live a very long time after the flood.
Roughly 120 years after this, after
the flood. He lived for 120 years.
I'm not sure how long.
Well, let's find out. Let's find out.
I think it's 120 years, but we will
Let's find out your pamphlet here.
Yeah.
Because if it is, you have a major fallacy you now have to figure out. For those of you who are curious about wanting to call in and pitch in your voice, we are willing to do that within the next few weeks. We're going to open up a phone line. We actually do have a phone line now. We didn't air it live, obviously, because we want to keep things nice and calm for our first episode. We will bring on our call later. We were looking, actually, another guy hit us up. Let me give him a shout out real fast about possibly doing a show. He has another debate show, and we are seriously looking into doing a show with him because it was just so solid. Calvin Moore from the podcast that is Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. Solid podcast. Let's do a little bit on the way in. Really looking forward to do stuff with him.
So as the aging process developed post-flood, Noah lived 350 years post-flood.
Okay!
The average lifespan decreased from 1,000 years to 120 years in the year of Moses. So this wasn't an all-at-once occurrence.
So
This was gradually decreasing.
Explain to me why it's gradual, not instant.
Why it's gradual?
Hmm?
Because the water canopy layer above the earth, pre-flood...
Ozone?
What?
Ozone.
The water canopy.
The water canopy is the layers of the atmosphere.
As described in the Bible.
Stratosphere.
Water canopy as described in the Bible.
Wait, hold on. Is the water canopy different than the stratosphere and the ionosphere? Is that different?
This is the description of our atmosphere.
Okay, but
all right, so when I say that the heavens opened and the waters came from above, it is the water canopy that's described in this. And this actually shielded harmful radiation from the sun. And acted as
an ozone layer.
Yeah, acted as our ozone layer in a denser environment, in a denser atmosphere.
You are now suggesting that ozone that we have now, that is so incredibly, I don't want to say fragile because it's not that fragile, but is
diminishing, as we could say.
Diminishing, as we could say. You were going to sit here and tell me that it was able to flip-flop from a water canopy to what we have now.
It's one and the same. I'm not saying that it's different. I'm saying that it is one and the same.
Okay.
And this is where the waters came from above, and this is where
in the water canopy. So explain to me this water. Explain to me the flip flop, because I want to know between water.
There's no flip flop.
So it is still the atmosphere.
It is still the atmosphere.
Okay, let me tell you. You want me to tell you why that's wrong? Because I can right now.
Why is that wrong?
I can sit right now and hi, Dave. Dave, the boss man just came in. Hi.
Hi.
I'm gonna get yelled at. I'm in trouble. I'm already in trouble. I'm only in here like 20 minutes. What's going on?
You just want to talk on the front of the mic.
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know how to do this correctly. I'm so sorry. He just saved us. Oh, Dave, you're a hero and a legend. Podcast Detroit Radio Network. All right, anyways, back on. I don't even know where I was. Where am I?
I was telling you.
Oh, right. Hold on. I got you. Okay, so let me tell you right now why this is an issue, okay? We detect water when we're doing stuff like CAPE and whatnot through a parcel, okay? A parcel is a unit of air. Air contains moisture, all right? Here's the thing. We can actually calculate through water vapor, through humidity, how much water is there. All
right,
so if you want to say that amount of water is – it hasn't changed. That's what you said, correct? It hasn't changed.
It has changed the location.
The mesoscale is the small location. So what location was it in? Is it the altitude? Is it the actual geological location? Could you please explain a little further?
I mean, I'm describing you the actual atmosphere itself, in and of itself.
I study atmosphere. Yeah, I'm all about this. Please explain this
thicker,
to me.
Was thicker pre-flood and that this was
– Can you explain
– are you – a result of the ecosystem in and of itself pre-flood, and I am explaining.
All right.
So the water canopy.
I'm sorry. I'm just
was the heavens above, and this was the water that came from above.
So there is. I'm going to ask the same question again because I need to understand because I feel like I'm kind of losing you a little bit. I think I'm losing my train of thought while you're explaining.
Yeah. Right.
The layers of the atmosphere we have now are no different. Correct.
No.
So we have more – so that means there had to have been
– A denser another layer beyond that.
And somehow it fell through. It rained through. And then the waters from the heaven.
The rain in and of itself was created in the 40 days and 40 nights.
Okay, here's the problem you have with that. All right. First off, if it's too high, it's going to freeze, turn to ice. It's going to come back down as rain because you're up it too high. All right. Here's the other issue. If it's too low, it's going to rain. All
right?
So if you have that much water above you, you're going to have precipitation. It's not going to be another option. I can take you out. We can launch a sounding rocket, not today, but in a few weeks. We can launch a sounding rocket, and I can show you these numbers from a rocket. I can show you from a balloon. I have video of me launching a weather balloon with Dr. Gensini from College of DuPage. I can get these numbers because I do this. I mean, I'm not trying to be rude to you. Everybody else also listen. Please don't think I'm being rude to anybody because I'm not trying to be. But the issue is that you say the water is above you. Okay, that's great. But it freezes. Once you get above, I think it's a couple thousand feet, it begins to get cold. If I'm going to fly at 5,000 feet in my airplane, I need to wear a coat. I need to wear a jacket. It's cold. It gets real cold. I mean, it's bad news up there. It is a very dangerous place upstairs. I understand everybody's going, but there's different cloud layers, Robert. So, I mean, up in the – you have some of the Cirrus Stratus clouds, and they're all wavy and puffy, and they're all the way up there. And you're right. That's right. They're not very dense. They also don't hold – was it 320 million gallons of water above us? Like, that's insane. So, I didn't pause. You reached for the bell. Did you reach for the bell?
No.
Yes, you did.
I did not.
Son, I got you by two. But anyways, no, what I'm trying to say is – what I'm trying to say is that the math is just completely incorrect. Because if you're going to have that much water above you, I understand the surface area is larger the further out of the radius you go. That's like fifth grade math. so it would need to be thinner, correct? But even
I'm describing that the ecosystem in and of itself.
Yeah, and I'm telling you that it's wrong.
Didn't require rain.
But then we get back to the plant thing. It's like, but they needed, and the people are still sending us water. Our bodies, unless you want to believe in evolution again, had to have water to drink. And I understand they fermented stuff into wine. I get that. But even then, like, I don't understand how you get away from evolution now. And I understand evolution is another topic for another time. But right now, we're delving into a small bit. Right. I'm gonna need that answer. In fact, actually, I'm gonna need an answer in 5 minutes.
Is that how much time we have left?
Yeah, 5 minutes and 30 seconds, unfortunately.
5 minutes and 30 seconds. Got it.
I don't think they're going to charge us for running over given the issues of the day, but I don't want to push it either. Got it! 3!
I'm very bad at not pausing in my debates, apparently. But
it's fine. It's something, if it means anything to you, on the Karen, I think it was the Karen and Caleb show I used to air here, when I paused because I was thinking they would do it to me. So.
Yeah.
You're not the first person to have that done, too.
Yeah.
That and it's funny to listen to back. Right. You'll smile later. This has been fun. This is an awesome. Yeah. This is a good concept. Fun. Hope I can't wait to see what people think about this show. Yep. Yep. So, anyways,
I have enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is awesome.
To your original point. Would you mind restating it?
Yeah, the original point is that here's the issue. Okay, to say that the water wasn't here, the ecosystem evolved around us. I'm gonna say that's our bodies. That's a huge adaptation. Our bodies are 70% water.
Right. And this,
hold on. I haven't got to answer your original question.
You had a great point.
Hold on. Here we go. Okay, the body haven't adapted. The food stuff hasn't – would have to have adapted so much. I wouldn't call that adaptation. I'd call that legitimate evolution because water for food
– Did a species change?
I would say yes. I would say particularly for the plants.
It is the same species. It is just larger. So the plants were able to grow larger. The animals were able to grow larger in and of themselves.
Okay.
The people –
What do you mean plant – how much did a plant grow then? By what percentage did a plant get bigger then? Because they're not fish. However long you feed a fish, a fish will just continue to grow, but plants don't do that.
Stats on plants, but I do know the insects were 10 to 10-fold larger.
Back then?
Yes.
How do you know that? From fossils?
Yeah, from fossils. Fossil evidence. Fossil evidence.
Well,
shows
you know, fossil evidence also has microbial stuff too, right? I mean, you understand that there's an entire.
I understand.
And you understand that a lot of those old animals were all lost, right?
And the Smithsonian Institute also did a study. Been there. Did a study on the oxygen-rich environment where insects were able to grow 10-fold larger. This can be replicated. This is something that has been replicated.
Do you understand how dangerous that is when I have access to all my little science gadgets? Because you understand I'm about to go get a grasshopper larva and go put it into one of my tanks and make him an oxygen-rich – you understand that's about to happen.
Oxygen-rich environment. You're creating the pre-flood environment that I'm talking about.
Pure oxygen, or not do I need to change?
Oxygen.
Okay, what else? So to create your environment, which is replicatable, what do you want to see out of that? As we get to 2 minutes left,
what do I want to see out of what?
If I'm going to recreate this, which I'm actually about to look into because I'm interested.
Right.
What do you need to see?
What do I need to see
in the atmosphere? Pre-flood atmosphere. Your best guess.
Pre-flood atmosphere.
Since you know more than the atmosphere guy sitting right next to you.
The same makeup with less UV rays.
I can cut out no UV rays. I can make it pitch black. Did you reach for the bell again?
No, I did not.
he's trying to put me down. It is no joke. It is no choice, son. All right, here's what I'm saying. We can talk about experiments later on Facebook because we have a Facebook page which you're going to like because you love us so much and you're not laughing at us.
Stay tuned. Right.
Stay tuned for next on the podcast, Detroit Radio Network.
All right.
But anyways, actually, we're almost at time. That sucks. That being said,
this is actually a subject I'd like to revisit at a later date.
Yeah, we got a lot of other stuff to go through, but we can always come back to this. So I think actually what we're going to do is go ahead and wrap this up right now. We've hit our limit for what we're able to do in a day. Yeah. I want to say thank you guys for the first episode. I understand there was a weird scheduling issue. I understand it sounds weird, but the fact of the matter is I know we hip flip-flop, we bounce around a lot, but the fact of the matter is that's how a debate goes. We have questions, and we're not going to hesitate to ask. Again, I'm sorry about the pauses, but I'm going to fact check to make sure I'm right before we tell, you know, whatever the ridiculous number of people we're live to right now.
Right.
A wrong answer. I'm not going to do that. So with all that being said, Travis, say a couple goodbyes.
Well, thank you so much for listening. I love you. And please tune in for our next
episode, which we don't have a date for yet.
I was about to say a date.
We don't have a date because we're going to see. We need to set a date. We'll see what our audience responds to. We'll see. Yep. That being said, my name is Robert Gibbs. Like I say, Chaser's Lounge is up next. Please stay tuned here on live on Studio 2. Thank you so much for listening. Again, our Facebook is compare and contrast red hot debates on hot button issues. Look that up. I know it's a long name, but compare and contrast was already taken, so I was mad about that. But make sure to check us out, and we're going to be able to talk to you right there. Send us anything, and we'll make sure to try to reach out to you guys as well. So from all of us here at Podcast Detroit, I want to say thank you and goodbye, and we'll see you, I guess, next time.
Yeah, next time.